Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging. And their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
And this week we have Sarah, a twin mum, our favourites, and the owner of Wholesome Blends.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, Kate.
Hello, Mandy.
Hello.
I feel like I have to have full disclosure that we have recorded for half an hour without me putting the, what is it called? Is it an SD
card?
I don't even know what it's called. There's one thing, the red light, the record light has to be red.
Because
I'm looking at it. It's blue. I'm not
Sorry. Oh. Anyway, we're going to crack on because our beautiful guest has already told a lot of our story. So we're gonna jump straight to it. We won't do any banter.
No, we won't.
Hello, Sarah. How are you?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on. And thank you for re-listening to all of my
story. No, we're gonna do it. Oh, we're sorry to put you through this.
All right.
No, it's fine.
First question, which I think I know the answer to. What is your favorite song?
Well, and this one, this question, I really probably have spent a lot of time on preparation for this because I think it's the hardest question. It's like asking me to choose which is my favorite child. And that's always, the answer to that is always the dog, of course.
Yes.
But I have a really eclectic taste in music and I'm just looking at my main playlist is on my Spotify is a bit of Pink Floyd, Jeff Buckley. There's a bit of Ed Sheeran in there and Beck Runger. But to be honest, I think when I really thought about what song I would play just in any mood, it is 1955 by the Hilltop Hoods and Montaigne.
Yes.
And as much as I think I can sing like her, I can't, but I in my head I can. And it's just a beautiful song. The Hilltop Hoods are just like my favourite. I'm a bit of a hip-hop fan.
Too. Yeah, big fans. Yeah. I love their dad style.
Cool.
Yep. They've never tried to be not who they are.
Yeah.
Constantly encouraging young Australian musicians. And wasn't Montaigne our
Eurovision?
Yeah, her voice is.
Yeah. Oh, my God, her voice.
Yeah. So amazing. So anyway, love that song. It's also on my playlist. And now it's on the P's playlist.
Now, you did say something last time. Say it again the lyrics.
I think that it's the 1955 that has, I don't tell people where I'm from, I tell them where I'm close to, which I relate to as growing up in the Yarra Valley because people had never heard of Launching Place, but they would have heard of Warburton. So I'd say, I'm from near Warburton.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah. And I have a similar thing. I happened to say this even yesterday because I'm from small town rural New Zealand and no one's ever heard of my town of 3,000 people of Waimate. So I say I'm from Timaru, which is where I went to school. So yeah. In between Christchurch, Dunedin. But, yeah, I'm from a town near Timaru.
Yeah, so I tell them where I'm close to.
Yeah, I was in Ferngully, so I'd always say, oh, the Dandenongs.
Yes.
Yeah, and then people would go, oh, yeah, okay, get that. Yeah.
Yeah, and the suburb that I live in, literally no one's ever heard of. And I have to say the suburb still now today.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no one's. So. It's just, I think for us, because we live near it and you're 2 minutes away, you've heard of it. But, lots of people haven't. So.
Okay, what about, did you win any awards at school?
That's a really easy no. I was not sporty. My brothers were, our whole family, the Thomas family, were all basketball players. I was the shortest out of all of them.
I was going to say,
I loved
tall?
Cricket. No, but everyone else is. Yeah. And they love to tell me that. And my children now are taller than me. I really skipped that gene. I was a massive cricket fan and I think I would have won awards if I was able to play cricket as a child.
Yes.
But I said to my mum, why didn't I play? And she said, because where we were, there was no girls' cricket team and you weren't allowed to join the boys' team. So I love it and I love to watch it. So I'd like to think, I would have been a great cricket player
yes,
too.
You would
have. But now I watch
Elise
it.
Elise Perry
no awards.
Really would have been. You and Elise Perry would have been up there.
Yeah, exactly. But I was in the choir at school and I did travel with our choir to all the school competitions and we won awards for that. So I'll claim a little bit of that if that's okay, because I loved being in the choir. It was so fun.
Oh, it's the best.
So
and
fun.
A joint award. Like I feel like, you know, when you watch
we're sharing the love.
The sports and it's the relay or the or the swimming. Yeah. It's just the joy of four people winning or whatever. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
And our favourite question, why are you a P?
Oh, I am very honoured to be a P because I am a mum to beautiful identical twin boys, Lewis and Cohen, who are now 15 years old. And when the boys were three, Lewis had a massive stroke. He had a big cerebral hemorrhage in the basal ganglia area of his brain. Mm. And that resulted in lots of diagnoses, but mostly right side hemiplegia, which is a form of cerebral palsy. Mm. So I am a P because of my beautiful boy. And when I think, you know, when I talk about Lewis's disability, it's all of our, like, it was the whole family. Yeah. We've all become, you know, that family.
Yeah. Yeah. And we made this podcast for you. We made it for twin moms,
we
right?
Did. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the whole point because there wasn't anyone talking about our awesome families.
No. Everybody's
welcome.
And
it's so welcome,
interesting.
It's Yeah. And it's interesting watching like the twin. I've only got the two kids, but that dynamic between those two, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
It's
very unique.
So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's really strong, really strong.
So can you tell us a little bit about that, you know, the age of three and what was happening, like I said before? It's a time where you sort of feel like maybe you're coming out of some tricky things. Like I felt like.
Well, maybe they're sleeping. Maybe they're eating.
Maybe you're doing a bit of toilet training. You're cutting out your day sleep. Like some of those things, life opens up
maybe
a little bit.
Maybe they're at kinder or
daycare.
That's
what I mean.
It's so true because it was actually when they turned three that I really was like, oh, I feel like maybe I might have another baby now. Mm. I remember sitting outside with my now ex-husband at the time and the boys had been in the house. They were in the house. I could hear them playing. But we were having this like very rare, hadn't done it in so many years, occasion where we were sitting outside on a Sunday morning.
Still.
Having a coffee and we read a paper. Yeah. I mean, who does that when you've got twins? But it was kind of at that point I remember saying to him, I think I might be ready to have another baby. And he just kind of went straight back to the paper, of course. But I feel like that decision was made really quickly for me because 3 months later Lewis had a major stroke and our lives flipped upside down. Mm. And he went back to a newborn stage where he was back in – he had toilet trained. We like to say he trained himself. He toilet trained himself twice before his brother was fully out of pull-ups. So there's a bit of rivalry.
Claim that fame.
He did. Yeah. If there's a an argument, it's like, but I toilet trained. Yeah. and he was back to core strengthening, you know, sitting up straight and walking around the couch and relearning all of those newborn things again. Mm. So, I mean, I got my wish, but yeah, it was made for us. So, and I'm really happy. Like, I think that I'm such a boy mum. Oh, I gush with girls. I love little girls. But, oh, man, it's the fart jokes. It's the, you know, I am such a boy mum. Mm. I really am.
They
it's
definitely
fun.
Keep it real. Mm. And they keep you they very keep it down real, to yeah. earth. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about the day that you thought, what's going on with my boy?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess my history of work is I'm actually an event manager, and that's what I've done forever. And we were living in rural New Zealand at the time in a little town called Whakatane, which is where the White Island volcano exploded. And so I was in charge of doing the local home show. So we'd done that whole weekend. Their dad had them for the weekend. And as the event had finished, all the exhibitors were bumping out, and I said to them, I'm going to sneak home and try and have dinner with the kids and, you know, before they go to bed.
Yeah.
So I went home and I walked in the door, and I'd seen them a little bit, but I was really excited. And I said, hey, boys. And they both said back to me, hi, mummy. But Lewis said, hi, mummy. Mm-hmm. And I said to my then husband, what's wrong with Lewis? He sounds like he's drunk. Mm. And he said, oh, he's probably just bitten his tongue. And I was like, yeah, actually, he's probably just bitten his tongue. They've both done that 100 times. And yeah, sure, no problems at all. So I had dinner, went back, finished the event. And then because I hadn't seen, you know, the build up to an event is massive. Yeah. And so that Monday, I just kind of turned everything off, and we had a really nice mummy and boys day. And we went, you know, shopping and bought Lego at Kmart, and we went to a cafe, and then we came home into baking. And you know, and I look back on, because, you know, when you go through something like this, you research everything that you can. Mm. And so I had pulled footage from CCTV to see how Lewis was walking on that day, so I can see what it was like. And there was no signs that anything was going wrong that day. So everything was fine. Until
that was
about
a Monday.
That was the Monday, yep. Yeah. And so 7 o'clock that night, he fell asleep in my arms on the couch. And that he'd never done that before. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's unusual, but he's tired. I'll put him to bed.
Yeah, yeah. Could be getting a cold.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just, you know, big day. And sure, you know, we all get tired.
Yeah.
So then that night, I guess, was the first real signs of something was desperately wrong, which was at about 11 o'clock. He woke up absolutely like absolute screaming, and put him into our bed, and then it was just vomiting every hour, almost on the hour, all through the night. Oh. And crying and vomiting, and you know, and I didn't think, I just kind of thought maybe he had gastro. Yeah. He didn't have a fever.
Yeah.
So I didn't, you know, bad mummy moment, and I'm happy to own it. It's my moment, but I didn't give him any Panadol or Nurofen because there was no fever. So you know, what was that going to do? He probably just had a tummy bug.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
No,
don't no,
like, that's not no. a bad mummy. You're like, he hasn't got a fever.
No. Now I'm the opposite. I'm like, take all the drugs. Sure. Yeah, put it in your school bag. You,
sometimes
you know
when
how
you're
much
in
that
constant vomiting cycle, though, it's very hard to know, A, you're what like, time it is, how many times have we vomited? How
do
many
I give them water? They're going to vomit it straight back up.
Yeah. It's very hard to know how to handle it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wasn't even in the how many times had he vomited. I wasn't even counting anything because I didn't know that's what my world was about to become. Yeah. So, I took him to hospital the next day. We went to emergency, and he presented with dehydration. Sorry, and so they put IV fluids into him and ran a whole heap of tests to see. He was giving us no clues at all, as they do when they're three, you know. And he was just tired and sleepy, and there was really nothing that we could do except for wait. And then they put us on the wards, and at about 7 o'clock that night, the pediatrician came in to me and said, look, we'd like to test him for meningitis. And my heart dropped because I had been so onto looking for the signs of meningitis because, you know, when you're a first-time mum, it's something that you really – it's something you're quite educated about.
Yeah, they've got
I
the little things
then.
Around at all the doctors and the infant.
Yeah, you know how
checking
to
for rashes,
check for
all
the
that
spots
stuff.
And stiff neck, all of that. Yeah. And then I felt really bad because I was like, oh God, I didn't pick up on the signs, and I thought I was, you know, on this. But anyway, so we did a lumbar puncture, which is one of the worst things I've ever done in my life with him. Thank God he doesn't remember that. But I remember that. Oh,
no,
gosh.
I'll never forget it.
Yeah, and signing that permission slip for the lumber puncher and holding him so tight that I nearly broke his little body, you know, to keep him still. Mm-mm-mm. So we did that, and that was about 7 o'clock. And then close to midnight, the pediatrician came back into me and said, you know, and it's, and I still remember because I now think, slightly condescending, but at the time he's like, congratulations, well done, good work, Mum. He's got meningitis. You've picked it up so early. Well done. And I was kind of like, oh, I didn't pick it up, but okay, sure, I'll take that.
It's not really a well-done moment. It's very frightening.
This is where I kind of think now, wasn't condescending. You know, he just didn't know how to talk to people. But anyway, we had an answer. So that was fabulous.
Did they feel we were going to start him on relief or? Probably not.
Yeah,
scared.
I think it did.
Yeah.
Well, I felt like, okay, cool. I'm a bit of a planner. It's like, okay, cool. Right, so what are the next steps? What do we need to do? Yeah. IV antibiotics, maybe in hospital for a couple of days, but you should be out by the end of the week and it should be, and you'll be fine and life's going to be great, you know.
Yeah.
And so we were instantly quarantined in this little rural hospital. And, you know, when I say quarantine, this is 12 years ago. It's very different to a quarantine now, which back then it was a curtain pre-COVID. And the nurse wearing a mask. Yeah, pre-COVID. Pre-actually being scared of infectious diseases. Yes. So, you know, I was allowed to wander around the hospital and go to the toilet and go to the cafe. It was fine. So the next day, so we're now on Wednesday. So for when we talk about, you know, his slurring of his words on the Sunday to now the Wednesday, he wasn't responding to the antibiotics to treat the meningitis. And it was just before, it was about 11 o'clock, the pediatrician came and did rounds and he sat on the bed and Lewis was watching a movie and eating a yogurt. And I still remember those two things because they're in his hospital notes that the pediatrician said to him, what movie are you watching? And he very clearly said Madagascar. And he was independently eating a yogurt. And then probably about an hour later, we were mucking around and I tickled him and his arm didn't move. And then I noticed his smile was a little bit lopsided. Mm. And, you know, I was 34 years old at the time. I was a relatively new mum and I knew what stroke was. That was for old people. You know, that not once through that entire process did that ever enter my mind.
Well,
that
it didn't enter his smile had dropped. Professional's mind. So you think maybe this is a meningitis thing. They know what they're doing.
I think from that, you know, moving really forward, I don't know how many medical professionals, incredibly high doctory type medical professionals and allied health have said to me, yeah, but kids don't have strokes. Like, I don't know how many times I've heard that.
And you're like, hello, says that.
And initially, well, they said that to me, that night, you know. And now I'm like, well, yeah, they do.
Yes, they do.
Anybody
in utero. Yes. Like, my goodness. In utero,
exactly. Yes. But it's also the like, identical twins, or twins are really rare, identical. And I'm like, actually, no, they're not that rare.
No.
Like, we're not the only people in New Zealand that has identical twins. So, anyway, so I let the junior doctor know who was a visiting doctor from overseas, and he was amazing. I let him know about 12:30 that I was worried about Lewis's smile that had dropped. This is during the day, on the Wednesday. His smile had dropped and his arm wasn't really moving, and should I be worried about that? And he said, I'll go and speak to the doctors. And no one come in to see us. And then, you know, if you've been in hospital a few days, you know that you kind of you get to know the nurses. Yeah. And my favourite nurse come back on for her shift at 4 o'clock. And the first thing I said to her was, three and a half hours later, I said to them, you know, I told them at 12:30 that this had happened. Oh, I know. I said, you know, his smile's dropping, his arm's not moving. And I told them that. And should I be worried about that? And she was so professional. She goes, let me just go get a doctor and I'll be back in a minute. And she instantly kind of ran out of the room. And then we're heading in. We were really lucky that that hospital, because it's rural New Zealand, that hospital had a CT scanner. So, you know, we're just going to do it. We're just checking, you know. There was no nothing given to me at that point. And so they took us in for a CT scan. And it was interesting because I knew one of the nurses at the hospital. Her son was in our home-based daycare with my boys. So she knew us really well. And she's like, hi. And she's like, what are you doing here? And I said, oh, Lewis is sick, but, you know, I think it's going to be fine. We're on top of it. It's meningitis, but we're good. And she said to me later that when she was in with the pediatrician when the scans came up on the computer. And as they came up and they saw them, the brain bleed was right in the middle of the brain where you couldn't access in the basal ganglia. And it was about the size of a hockey ball. And she didn't let on to anyone. She knew us. And she said to the doctor, "What's going to happen?" And he said, "That kid's not going to make it through the night." Aww. And she said, and I just had to walk out. And she told me this months later.
Of course she
thank God not on the night. And I just was like, wow. And then there was this whole process of, we're calling an ambulance. So now it's about 6 o'clock. Not an ambulance. We got helicoptered up to Starship. Right. So we're getting a helicopter. It's coming. And then, then there's the phone calls. My mother was on the way up the next day because Lewis had meningitis. So she was going to come and look after Cohen. And I remember ringing Mum and saying, You can't. We're not going to be here. We're flying to Auckland, and she's like, "What's happening?" And it was so. I don't know. I think you go into. I think I went into a form of shock, right? And they'd said to me, "He's got a bleed in his brain," and I said to Mum, "He's got his head's bleeding," and she said, "His head," and I said, "His brain's bleeding." She said, "Well, his head or his brain?" And I said, "I don't know, Mum. I don't know. I mean, obviously, that's such a stupid question, I couldn't answer. I was like, I don't know, but we're flying up there and don't." She ended up changing her flights. They let her do that for free, and I think she cried on the phone, and she came up and stayed with us in Ronald McDonald House. But then there was another phone call straight away to one of my girlfriends, another twin mum, and I said to her, and usually when we have a chat, it's, "Oh, it's a big, big, big chat and often a wine." And she goes, "Oh, hi, darling, how's it all going?" And I said, "Jo, I said, "I need to talk to you. I said, this is what's happening, and can you meet us at the hospital? I don't know what to do with Cohen." So Andrew and Cohen were driving up. We were flying up in the rescue helicopter, and I said, here's Andrew's number. I don't know. Can you just come and get Cohen?" And so she met him in the hospital car park at midnight and took some time off work.
Friend.
Crazy, hey, people drop everything. So anyway, so we arrived at the hospital at midnight and we were straight into ICU and our process started. So, yeah, it was a big one.
It's really hard. Like, I know my father passed away from a stroke, but he was 74, right? So they knew what was happening. But I just remember even then them saying, "But we got it at the right time and we gave him this meds and then this should work. Everything matters about the time." And it didn't work for my dad. Some people it doesn't work for. But I can't imagine the head miles that you have done going, "Why the fuck didn't somebody?" I mean, it would never have been like an amazing outcome, but.
No, but imagine if someone had actually picked up.
Had a scan.
And the other thing with Lewis is, and we did investigate it, but they actually. They overdosed his IV fluids by four times the amount that he should have had because there was a mistake on the chart. So by the time the nurse change came in, they then realized he'd blown up like a balloon. Yes. So that had put additional pressure on his brain. So we don't know whether that started the paralysis. Yeah. We won't ever know.
No.
But he was fine up until then, until that IV fluid administered had gone in. So, and look, Lewis and Cohen's godmother is a doctor. She's looked at the notes and she said, "Look, we won't ever know." And she said, "These are the hardest notes I've ever had to look at. I cried the whole way through."
Of course.
And she said, "Look, regardless, there potentially could have been a slow bleed happening through that time, but it might have exacerbated for the paralysis then." But and then, in hindsight, maybe that was a good thing because it showed the bleed, So
You don't know.
No.
So how long were you in there for? How long was he in ICU?
Yeah, so we were in ICU, I don't remember. It was days, maybe 4 days. I slept on the floor the first few nights. The beautiful, amazing, funny, ironic thing about my child is that he got sick 1 week before New Zealand hosted the Rugby World Cup. Mm. So there was not a room in the inn anywhere.
Nowhere to stay.
Lewis does it in style. So it didn't matter how much money in the world we had. The entire rugby union nation was in Auckland at the time. So I was like, it's huge. So mum was on a flight up. I didn't know what to do. Ronald McDonald House. Oh, my goodness. I will never, ever be able to repay their kindness. Mm. And they ended up getting us a room. And then I was like, mum's coming. I don't know what to do. I've got nowhere else to put her close to the hospital. And they so easily said, doesn't matter. We'll get you a bigger room. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So we were in hospital for about 5 weeks, I think, all up. We went from ICU to the high dependency unit in the brain injury unit. And then we went to a rehab centre in Auckland, a paediatric rehab centre for 11 weeks. And through that time, we had to split the kids as well because Cohen and Andrew, Andrew needed to go back to work. And especially in this rehab centre, you know, we were in a one-bedroom studio apartment that had everything that he needed to recover, you know, Monday to Friday through the week. And we had one child that needed extreme rest, you know, like 20 hours a day of sleep for brain development. And then I had another little three-year-old that was bouncing around and trying to keep them contained in a medical facility.
I can't.
And it was winter and it was rainy. And so we made the decision to split the kids. And that's a decision we don't regret. It had to happen. It certainly affected psychologically both of the kids and probably us as well. It was hard.
Well, at that point, you're in survival mode. And survival, that's what you're doing. And
it's a crisis.
I don't think anyone would have made a decision, but
And it was interesting that, you know, when we were in hospital and we're learning about, we're now under rehab, and they were asking us questions like, you know, for the first 4 weeks of Lewis's hospitalization, they told us to say goodbye every night.
Really?
So they told us to get the family together, to get whoever you needed. And that if he did survive this stroke, that he would never walk, talk, or eat ever again. And how wide were our hallways? Will you fit a wheelchair? Do you have two stories? Can he sleep downstairs? Do you have rail? Like all these questions. And I was like, why are you asking me this? And then I realized that, and at one point the doctors used the V word. He's going to be a V for the rest of his life. They used that. And it's never been used again with me, but I was just, I was kind of in shock that I was like, oh, he's not going to get better. And they're like, no, he's now disabled.
Yeah.
This will never come right again. And so I remember hearing this news, like they started these conversations with me when he was still in ICU and he was hooked up to all of these cords and feeding tubes and, you know, all the machines going beep. And it was just me and him at one day, and I looked at him. And I used to play this game, Alpha Lewis, Cifa Cohen, and I said to him, show me an Alpha Lewis. And he went like that with his hand that was working.
Yeah.
I said, show me a Cifa Cohen. And he went like that. And it was the exact moment where I was like, right, you're in there. I got to work out. So I'll get Terry down.
Oh, yeah. That's a moment, Sarah.
I got to work out how to get you out.
Yeah.
I don't care what they say.
Yeah.
You can't do.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
We're going to make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a really powerful moment, actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
You'll never forget it.
No. You're beautiful.
No,
boy.
But it was the moment that he showed me not
I'm
to
here,
give up.
Mommy.
Yeah.
And he showed me not to. He showed me to. That was the moment he showed me to challenge decisions from people that I have been told my whole life have all the answers and you have to respect.
Yes.
And
very
I had done that.
Yes.
And now I was shifting it and my son had the answer and I respected that more than anything.
Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful,
Mom. Wow. Anyway.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you're in hospital, how did the food happen? How did he move to having different foods? Tell us about all that.
Yeah, so he had a feeding tube, I'm assuming, I don't know when it got put in. Could have been put in before the
nasogastric.
So he had a nasogastric tube immediately. So we had it in ICU. May have had it in the helicopter, I don't remember. And so when we were on the wards and we started seeing all of the allied health team, we had a talk with the dietitian, and I don't really remember too much about that because it wasn't a priority. Because they wanted to get him eating again, and no one told me he wouldn't be able to eat. So we started with a nasogastric. He was on formula, can't even tell you. So we were on the nasogastric tube. No one ever talked to me about it being a permanent solution, that we would get back to normal, and his muscles were weak, but he will be fine and he'll be able to eat again. So, we talked about pureed foods and just taking it easy, and yogurts and mashed potatoes and stuff like that. So we didn't really think anything of it, to be honest. And we got him to a point in our 5-week admission in hospital where he was eating lots of yogurts and pastas, I don't know, soft, mushy type of foods. And then we moved into the rehab center. And then in the rehab center, we had our own little studio apartment. So I went back to cooking my own food. So we didn't have any formulas then at all. I think we might have had some Nutrini. We used to call them milkshakes. We got chocolate, strawberry, banana, and vanilla. And we had a script of those, and he would have one of those before bed, like a bottle before bed, or, you know, so we had those. And then he got really sick in rehab, and we got readmitted to hospital. He got asthma and bronchitis, and the NG tube went back in again. And that was the moment he never recovered from eating. So that was the moment. And they didn't believe me. No one believed me. No one helped. So we took him home with an NG hooked up to a pump. We were always told it's short term, it's short term, it's short term. And we just ran with it. I think I went home with a script. By the time we'd been fully discharged, Lewis had the feeding pump. I had a script. We got it from the chemist. Then we got the NG tube removed at some point. Still in the same year, but we still had the script of the milkshakes, what we called the milkshakes, the Nutritia products. And so we always had those, and we would pick them up from the chemist in New Zealand, and that was fine. But his eating was always so bad, so bad. But he kept it just above water for it to never be a big, big, big issue. Until we moved to Australia.
And when was that?
So we moved to Australia in 2013. And the reason was, so I have been on and off in Australia. I've lived here for, I think I worked out yesterday, nearly 28 years back and forth. I love New Zealand. It's beautiful. I miss a lot of the food, but I am very Australian. I love both countries, but Australia is home now. It has given me an incredible life. And I say I'm a New Zealand-born Australian, and I steal that quote from Pamela Stevens. I'd steal that quote from Pamela Stevenson, Billy Connolly's wife, because she's called herself I read one of his books and she had written that, and I was like, oh, I love that. So I'm a New Zealand-born Australian, except when it comes to the All Blacks. I'm sorry, but my alliances and allegiances will never, ever leave the All Blacks. But other than that, I'm fully Australian. So we moved back. So we've got citizens, the kids got citizenship, and we moved back here because in New Zealand, we left hospital, and when you go into the community, because kids don't have strokes, as we were, we learned before, we were eligible for 2 allied health therapies a month for Lewis's first year of recovery.
Hmm.
Yeah. Oh. However, if we paid privately for additional therapies with that same therapist or another therapist, we lost those 2 completely.
Oh, no. So,
that's what the rules were back then. So we had massive battles with the Department of Health over there. The kids were about to turn 5. We were looking at school. Lewis had got like a few hours help for the first few weeks of school, and then he was on his own. There was no gates.
Yeah.
He was Evel Knievel. He would have ran out on the road, you know.
Yeah.
So we really made the decision to come back here, and we looked at all our options. And A, I wanted to come back, and B, we just knew that we would be able to give the kids a better chance of everything if we move back here. So when we moved back here and we started school, what I think what I had not expected when we moved back here was that we had a new, so then we went under the Royal Children's Hospital, Royal Brisbane Women and Children's Hospital. It's moved now. So we went under that team. I don't think I realized I'm going to have to relive the whole thing again.
Yes.
And so I had to relive everything, every single minute of everything that had happened, I had to go through again. And that really, really was hard. And then that hospital moved to, it was then called Lady Salento Hospital. It's now called the Queensland Children's Hospital. Right. So our pediatric rehab team we've had since day one are amazing. Oh my God, I want Lewis to be pediatrics forever. But,
I've just left. It's really something.
Yeah.
Lewis is 15. He'll be 16 next year, and conversations have been.
Yeah, it's not fair.
Started, but not, So, anyway, we had an incredible team, and the eating was getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, and I didn't know what to do. And I was so stressed, and I was at the point where, you know, we had spoken to the team, we'd spoken to dietitian, speech therapist. Lewis's eating problem was muscle strength and his ability to chew and swallow. And to consume enough foods. He didn't give a rat's about
eating.
It
takes
eating.
A long time to eat.
And it uses so much energy to eat.
Yeah.
And I've always worked in events and restaurants, and so the kids ate everything. The only thing they didn't like was asparagus. So we didn't give them that. They loved broccoli.
Wow.
They loved they were good eaters. With the variety of food.
Yeah.
They just didn't really consume a lot. So when we had an assessment when Lewis started school, he got diagnosed with ADHD. Yep. And I distinctly remember the conversation with the neuropsychologist when he said, Lewis's results have come back for ADHD and we want to start him on Ritalin. And I just said to him, but that's going to suppress his appetite even more. And he said, yes. And he said, Sarah, and he's amazing, this man. I just would do anything for him.
Yep.
He said, Sarah, you need to make a decision on whether you want Lewis to eat or learn. And I was like,
oh my gosh, Sarah.
I can't make that decision. Like, that's not fair.
People asked that.
Well, and he wasn't asking it meanly, but he was like,
I know.
The choice you have.
No, we're agonizing for you as a mum as to how to handle that.
Oh my God.
I know. And so I was like, okay, we'll look into alternative therapies and I'm sure we'll get on top of this. And so for 10 months we tried cutting out dairy, we tried cutting out gluten, we tried doing this, doing that, changing everything.
Of course you did.
And I wasn't winning. And the week we put him on Ritalin, the kids did 6 months of prep and then we repeated it. So he's now a year into his school life. The week I put him on Ritalin was the week he learned his sight words.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It was amazing. And we've changed. He's still on meds now for school only, not through the weekends or holidays, but we've since changed that medication to a better suited one for him.
Yep.
because they're all different for different people.
Yep.
But as soon as we put him on that, his eating just got worse. Worse. Yeah.
I just wish that wasn't a side effect. It's so cruel.
It really is.
Yes. It's just, yeah. And honestly, I think, I don't know, the hardest thing I've ever had to do as a parent is feed my children, and that's from day one. It's from day one, it's feed my children, because you can't force that.
No, you can't.
Eventually they'll fall asleep if they're tired, but the eating is really tricky. So, yeah. So we did we had a little bit of Better Start funding back then. Mm-hmm. We didn't have much, but we were really lucky because I think Better Start was about $12,000 mm-hmm. for the first 7 years of early intervention mm-hmm. or something, and we had come to Australia when the kids were five. So $12,000 was not a lot, you know, for a kid with cerebral palsy, but it was okay for us to get him through that couple of years. And we ran out on that with our eating therapy that we did, our private eating therapy, because we every week I was there and, sometimes twice a week. And, you know, I got so burnt out and so exhausted. And my first thought every morning when I woke up was dread and horror that I had to feed my child. And I was about to go into World War III and sit there and do this. And we were doing eating therapy and our funding then ran out. We're paying privately because I would have sold the house to do that.
Of course.
And I remember one session, it never really worked. And one session I remember they said, you know, we'd do things like make a smoothie or bake cupcakes, or let's do a human cutout, a drawing of where your intestinal system and a big poo at the end. Lewis loved that one, you know. And I think we still got that somewhere. It's like, can we put it up? No. Yeah. The boy mum thing, right?
Yep.
And I remember there was one, and by this time we've been doing this for about a year and I was exhausted. And yes, I was going to these sessions. They knew I was done. And the session that time was bring in a whole bag of lollies, bring marshmallows, bring chewing gum, bring snakes, bring minties, bring all the crunchies, whatever, bring all the different textures of lollies. And I, you know, you overcompensate. I walked in with two Coles bags full of like $100 worth of lollies.
Yeah.
So I was like, which one will he eat? And he didn't even eat lollies or ice cream or anything at that point. I mean, I've got to remember there was 4 or 5 years, nothing went in that mouth, nothing at all. So we went into the session once and I walked in and I said, look, I know some kids are sweet kids or savory kids. I said, but he's not going to eat any of these. Like, but you know what? I'm just going to sit here. And by this time I was literally sitting in the corner. I wasn't disengaged. I didn't zone out. I wasn't on my phone. I was watching it, but I didn't contribute because it was their session and I had nothing left to contribute. And our session was 10 to 11. And I remember at 5 to 11 or 10 to 11, the therapist, who was amazing, looked at me. We looked at the clock and we had had nothing. You know, they had to analyze, what does it feel like? What does it smell like? Yep. Is it squishy? Whatever. And she did the best thing in the world. She looked at Lewis. She goes, hey, Lewis, come over here. So they went to a corner of the room. She put a marshmallow in her mouth and she spat it across the room. And she goes, can you get it further? And he looked at me. He looked at me as if to say, my mum's going to kill me if I spit something across the room. She got him back and she said, hey, I'm in charge here, not your mum. Can you get it further? So he put it in his mouth and they had a spitting contest with marshmallows.
What an awesome therapy. Amazing.
All over the floor. And right at the end she said to me, you're right, he didn't eat anything, but I got it in his mouth. I was like, you did. You win. I love this so much. And it was one of the best sessions we ever, ever had. So it was incredible. So, So then that just progressed for years. It was awful. Feeding was horrible. I hated it. Our whole family hated it.
So how was he surviving nutritionally at that point? Was he on the milkshakes?
With milkshakes. And I would make pikelets out of the vanilla flavor of those milkshakes. He would drink a glass of milk and I would put milk powder in the glass of milk or, you know, I would sneak something into anything. Oh, our mashed potatoes, like he'd eat a little bit of stuff. So mashed potatoes were half a pound of butter and one potato, you know, like I remember saying, am I going to have a heart attack?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
going to have a heart attack? And they said, oh, fat will fill on his body before it starts filling his arteries. I was like, okay.
Yeah,
good.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then this was just got worse and worse. And, you know, there were situations where we would have breakfast and it would take him an hour to eat one piece of toast with ultra prompting. And, you know, Cohen would be there crying, yeah, saying, Lewis, please, please eat. It's I don't want you to die. It was just huge.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then 6 years of this, so he was nine. So this had been 6 years of hell. Our team called us in for a meeting, or called me in for a meeting. They said, Lewis needs to get a PEG placement. We think he needs a feeding tube. And it was the biggest kick to the guts, because I think there is a fundamental, I don't know what to call it. There is a fundamental social expectation requirement as a mother that you love your child, you keep them clean, you keep them warm, and you feed them.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. I couldn't do that. One of those things.
It is that. Yeah.
Couldn't do it. I wasn't able to. Yeah. I'd failed.
Yeah.
And so, and it was a kick in the guts, and I'm happy to own that feeling. But now, knowing what I know, oh, my God, I wish we'd got that 6 years ago.
Yes.
Oh, my God, I wish we'd got it when he was in hospital, when he first had a stroke. Oh, my God, I wish I knew then what I now know. So,
well, you went on to change meeting, the world.
You have gone on to change the world.
So at that meeting, I said to the team who I'd worked with for a few years now, and they knew what I was like. I said, look, the formula for Lewis has been short term. It's never been a sole source of nutrition. It's never been a thing. I said, if he's going on a permanent feeding tube, I'm not feeding him formula. Yeah. I'm going to do real food.
Yep.
It's fine for every now and then, but it is fine for me, for my family, for my children, for every day. Because they said he needs to be nil by mouth. And I was like, no, one day he'll chew and eat. So I said, I'm not doing this as a sole source of nutrition. I'm doing blended diet. And they said to me, yeah, we thought you'd say that.
good.
Yeah, it was a good meeting. Like, there was no, you know, I was confident. They knew what I was going to say. Yeah. And I said, I understand the blended diets a no-no, I said, but I have identical twins. And this is how the rest of the story started. I said, I have identical twins. Lewis has a neurological condition that affects his muscles. His organs are fine. His immune system is fine. Those boys are still identical.
Yeah.
If I feed the family a plate of nachos and Cohen eats this portion of nachos, why can I not blend that same portion of nachos and give it to Lewis down his feeding tube?
Yeah.
Why? And they said, well, we can't actually. I said, why is that different? And they said, it's not different. I said, just because he's not eating it through his mouth, he's getting the same portion. If I put liquid in that and I give him some at 6 o'clock and then some at 10 o'clock like a dream feed, he's had the same portion as his identical twin brother.
Yeah.
So why are you telling me to do this differently? And they said, no, you're right. We can't tell you there's any difference to that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to them, look, I understand that you can't create a food diary. You can't help me. You can't analyze this because you're not allowed to. I get this is a taboo subject, but know that I am going to do this. And if I need your help, can I call on you to check his calories, check how much his stomach can hold? Can I ask you if I'm going too healthy, you know, whatever, let's do blood tests and see if I need to add iron or magnesium or whatever. I said, I don't know that.
You do, but
I know that I've given my kids healthy food their whole lives, and I know how to feed his brother. So let me feed him the same as his brother.
Wow,
and so
you deserve a round of applause.
So we did that. Yes,
we did that. And I don't, you know, looking back now about how taboo blended diets were back then, I knew that, but but I was going to do it with or without their help.
Yeah.
So, you know.
At least you're honest.
And I had the advantage of an identical twin. I had one up on them.
Yes. You're like, this person's eating this and this one is going to eat this.
I've used that many times and it's a great and it's a real and it's an obvious thing to say.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. It's a little superpower I think we have.
How did you go from I'm going to blend nachos to I'm going to blend nachos for everyone in Australia who wants them?
So, that was a really interesting time. So Lewis got his PEG. So this is fun. Lewis got his PEG on the 10th of March. My 40th birthday party was on the 17th of March, and I didn't like my husband that week, and I said, you're not coming to my party. and my girlfriend said, Sarah, you need someone to take you home and to take your presents. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's true. So he came to my party.
He was useful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He knows the story. It's fine. The 22nd of March was my birthday. We had organised to go up to Palm Cove and have a lovely, we've never done the Whit Sundays to do all awesome. Of that. And I spoke to the team and I said, can we still go up there? And they said, yes, stay in touch with Cairns Hospital. And I was like, that's fine. So while we went up and had my 40th birthday in a resort that I'd booked, we had a week up there. Their dad and Colm were out doing all the fun Whit Sundays things and Lewis and I were recovering in the resort, just being very, very quiet. And it was still nice. Then we get back and there was a massive cyclone that had hit Queensland. I think it was Katrina. I can't remember. It was 2014 and 14. My dates are all funny. Sorry. 13. And Palm Tree fell in the pool and I was left to deal with everything. So that was the day I told my husband I was leaving him. Mm. So that whole month.
That palm tree in that pool was like. Fuck that.
Palm tree.
I've done everything.
I just pulled.
And now I have to do this. I see you.
It's over.
It is over. Look at this tree. It's over.
He rang me and so said,
simple
hey,
of you,
babe.
You're going down.
And you know what? I'm going to fix this myself.
He rang me and he said, hey, babe, how's your day going? I said, How's my day going? I just pulled a palm tree out of the pool while you're at work and I'm here. How's my day going?
It's very hard.
So anyway, that was the decision. And look, we have a very good relationship. We don't hate each other. We are the statistic of twin parents and, the disability under the age of five. And we knew that. So we parent very well together still to this day. And, I mean, he's very good at doing what I ask him to do still, but,
Even better.
So all of that happened in that month. And I don't know what it is. And so for any younger, amazing peas out there listening to this, something happens in your 40s and all your fucks are gone. Yeah. So, it is your turn now and your turn to make the decisions. So I was blending for Lewis. I started doing that 17 days after he had surgery because his stoma was fine. And I was like, well, he's still eating a little bit orally. So how is that different is there to heal? They say leave it for 3 to 6 months to heal. And I was like, why? Food's going in there anyway. So I did that 17 days after. And I had to go back to New Zealand. My brother and his partner had a baby. I had a wedding to go to and I couldn't leave Lewis. So I took him with me and I said to Mum, I need a blender. And she, in rural New Zealand, she's on a farm. She said, Arnie, Kathy's cousin's sister's brother's got a great blender. I'll borrow it for you. And we're an hour away from any big, Kmart or it's Briscoe's over there, anything. And so that first night I arrived at Mum's house, I blew up a blender. And I was going to do? And I had armed myself with some formula and I had some baby food and things like that. So I kind of made it work. But I got back from that trip going, this is ridiculous. I should be able to travel and take food with me. What is going on? And I had researched that there was a food available in America, tried to get it.
Couldn't get it.
I did not ever in my life intend to do what I am doing right now. I tried to buy this.
Yeah.
Couldn't get it into the country. Right. Could not get it through. And plus the cost was ridiculous. So I just thought, I think I might do this myself. So it was literally a couple of months after Lewis's peg surgery. Why can't I do this myself? Yes. So here I am, a single parent with twins, very, very disabled child. I was really lucky that in my lifetime I've worked in incredibly amazing event situations with incredible chefs and at the time I was the head of events at the Queensland Art Gallery. So there was a team of chefs that helped me and and they created, I got the boys to kind of help me, my pork and oats wholesome blends was created by one of the art gallery chefs.
That's amazing. So,
and that was the first one I did for Lewis. And so also with that, my ex-husband had built a manufacturing facility for one of the jobs that he had worked with, and that indirectly flows on to the wife, right? And then he had also started a small dairy butter company. So he had built a manufacturing plant. He had gone through export and compliance. They had made mistakes and they'd learned lessons. Then he started up a little dairy company, and so he had gone through all the food safety standards. So I I didn't think I really knew anything about food manufacturing, but guess what? I really did. And yeah. I really doubted myself initially, and yep. I didn't think I could do this.
No.
But, we separated assets. And you know, I when I came out of my marriage, I had enough to go and buy a small, comfortable house for me and the boys and have a very small mortgage, and I had a really good job at the time, and life could have been quite easy. We just would have plodded on. Or I could have started a business and taken that risk.
Which one did you choose?
Really
I just thought, there's two things. I didn't want to die. I didn't want to be on my deathbed going, I wish I'd done that.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to do that. I knew it was going to happen by somebody. And I didn't also ever, not that he would, because he is amazing and I know that, but I never wanted Lewis to say, why didn't you try this? Or why didn't you fix this? Or did you look at this in my recovery?
Yeah.
I never wanted him to ask me anything that I hadn't already tried that.
Yep, yep.
And he won't do that. I know that because he's such a beautiful boy. But I wanted to not leave any stone unturned.
Yeah,
and that's why I started Wholesome Blends.
Yeah.
And I also, there was another reason for that. I knew I wanted to do a business because the other reason was that Lewis doesn't have use of half of his body. Mm. He wears an AFO. Mm-hmm. He has epilepsy. His hand doesn't work and it won't work. He can't shake someone's hand. Mm-hmm. He can't fake a job interview.
No.
And I wanted to give him the option that he never needed to have a job interview.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So if I could build a business that he had a place in, if he chose to,
it was
there.
Yes.
He doesn't want to. He wants nothing to do with it. He's going to be a famous YouTuber.
Yeah,
you know,
yes.
However, that doesn't pan out. Hopefully there'll be something here.
Yeah.
So that's how Wholesome Blends started.
Oh, it's an incredible story.
And how many blends do you have now?
So we have now, we've just launched our fourth blend. Mm. And it takes about a year to get a blend off the ground.
Yeah.
And it takes about 80 grand to develop, research and develop that blend as well. So, you know, it's not something I can just go, here's 10 of them.
No.
So it takes a really long time. And we really, I put a lot of effort into what goes into that blend. I do not want additives, preservatives, added sugars. I want it as natural as possible.
Yeah.
And I want it to be able to be used anywhere we want it to be used. So I want to take it overseas. I want to take it to my hospital appointments because that was such an annoying thing to not have shelf-stable food.
Mm.
So getting the cooking method right was so important, and having it to be able to be used in a long shelf life without losing any of the nutrients was a massive, massive big thing for me. And I'm really lazy as well. So I will, come school term, I'll go to school and drop two boxes off to school and go, here you go, here's Lewis's lunch.
It's not lazy. It's providing.
Yeah.
Then I kind of complain if my other child actually, you know, I have to make his lunch.
Yeah.
Can you not take a pouch? So, and it's interesting, like we're the first person, I am the first person to create this type of food in Australia. I've had no one to copy. I've had nothing. I talked to lawyers and physicians and food technologists and IP and all this, and there's nothing to compare this to, which has been so difficult. And so we've had to start from scratch and learn how to do it from scratch. And I've learned so much over the years. And I've put a spout on my pouches and no one else in the world was doing that, and I couldn't understand why, because I didn't like the mess I had to clean up.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to a park and pour it and put a cap back on it and put it in the fridge. And why has no one else done that? Because for me, I'm a mother. I don't, the less mess I have to clean up, the better.
Absolutely.
And now we've just last month, I think today is the first birthday of our new cherry cacao blend, and it's a healthier chocolate version. And that one came about again because of Lewis and Cohen, because I blended their birthday cake a few years ago because Lewis couldn't eat it, and I gave it to him. And actually, if you want to blend birthday cake and chuck some milk, it's delicious. I was like, I licked that one. I was like, oh my God, I'm eating. And Cohen said to me, and Lewis kind of agreed, he was like, why is there no birthday cake,
yeah,
Mum?
Yeah.
You know, and we see online our kids miss out on Easter egg hunts or Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever celebration we have, our kids are missing out. And this one's not designed to be a treat. It's designed to be a breakfast smoothie. It's an everyday blend, but it's something that they can have at Easter or Christmas or their birthday, and we can again feel included in these social interactions that we have with our families, which are so important, important.
And from a how it makes the people who use the blend feel, like I only know from friends or Melanie or, you know, our beautiful Melanie.
Beautiful Melanie.
I know that sometimes the formula and stuff has been really tricky for kids to digest. Are these blends? Like, do they sit better?
So I'm not against formulas.
No.
I'm not against So I'm really really for choice. So if people are using formulas and it's working, awesome. Keep using it.
Keep doing it. Yeah.
What works in your family? I'm about and we teach people how to blend at home safely as well. Yes. But what the difference between real food, and some people must be on formula because of a specific condition.
That's right.
That's fine. Don't change that. Yeah. My food is not going to cure cancer. It's not going to cure a cold. It's just mushed up food, but it's natural.
Yeah.
And so what that does for your gut health, which I am learning, and there is some medical research out there now to back this up, is it sits better in your gut. And things like there is increased reduction of constipation and diarrhea. Yes. So there are there is medical research, so I can confidently say that real food, blended food for tube food people will assist with gut health, with diarrhea and constipation.
Mm.
Other things, Lewis didn't really have too many major medical issues, so I can't comment too much, but things that my families are talking to me about is that what they are seeing is that the reflux is calming down.
Yes.
The vomiting is calming down. Aspiration. Just the tummy problems are starting. So it's reflux, diarrhea, constipation, vomiting, nausea. All these things seem to be helping when you are on a real food diet.
What? Even a little bit of help is a lot.
Yes.
If you're feeling constipated, it's yuck. If you've got heartburn, it's yuck. And if you've got all of those things,
constantly vomiting, all the food that you've all the formula you've preciously put in, and they're spending all their days vomiting, that must feel so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh, and look, as I said, you know, there is a place for formula, and I'm not against it, but for us, for me, it's like drinking a McDonald's thick shake 24 hours a day. Yeah. It's 55% sugar, and I don't think I would feel great if I consume that much sugar. So, it's the balance.
I love a thick shake. Yeah,
I might have had half a bar of chocolate last night, but I had no wine. I had no wine,
It's balance. Look, it's all about balance. Yeah,
it's balance, and I'm all about not telling people what they should be eating in their homes because I didn't like it when someone did it
to
me.
This is just what worked for you, and it's now working for something incredible.
So tell us about what are your hopes and plans for the future?
Yeah. I have big dreams, and it's really, really exciting about how well Wholesome Blends has been picked up, and that is because the families have trusted me and believed in me, and they are the ones out. Yeah. Oh, my God, I will never it's so hard to hold on to really understand how wonderful and how much they trust me. I don't know if I ever will deserve it, but I'm so grateful for this support, and they've become such good friends too. I just love them.
It's an awesome community.
But and I worked really hard to build that level of respect and trust. You know, I wanted them to know that I was the mum where those beeping machines was annoying. Yes. So I find that they're the ones spreading the word now. You know, they're the ones now going, we want this in hospital.
The magazine. Oh,
the Blend magazine has been a game changer worldwide.
Yes.
What would we do without that incredible woman? She's changed the world. She's opened doors. Yep, she has. So I think for me now, my focus now is to kind of get up on that, that medical level and start talking to hospitals and start being a little bit more strategic. So I will be... I'm not pulling back from anything. I don't think I can. I love my family's way too much. But now, the things that we have in development right now is that this afternoon I have a strategic planning meeting with Trade Export Queensland, where we're looking at our entry strategy and our entry strategy into America, which will be very soon.
Brilliant.
So that is a big. So that's now where, you know, we've got a beautiful range of blends. We'll keep developing as we can.
Yes.
We've got that down pat now.
Yep.
And we're happy with the flavors. So now my job is to get a little bit more strategic and how do we make this more available to more people at a cheaper price. So America is one thing that I am looking into right now. I'm really excited to say that we will be in New South Wales hospitals really soon. And you will not have to take your own blends from home because it will be there already.
Massive.
So, you know, and that's a, you know, there's conversations to be had around that, but Wholesome Blends will be the first whole food for tube-fed people in the world that is inside a hospital establishment health environment.
Incredible.
And that is a win. You know, I could die tomorrow. That is a win for our entire community that we fought so hard and now that is about to become a reality. And so, you know, thank you. There was an incredible team that helped with that, of course. And all the families sending me videos of them making Wholesome Blends in the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, it's great.
Yeah.
And look, I met with, you know, I was in Perth this week. I met with the Children's Hospital down there who were so amazing. And their team down there was so open to, you know, we know this change is coming. We want to help. We want to learn. We want to have the right messaging. We want, you know, I'm big on food safety. And so I walked away from the Perth Children's Hospital going, wow, what a progressive, incredible, amazing, open-minded organization. But 2 years ago, I had a mother send me a photo of her feeding her daughter Wholesome Blends in the car park because she wasn't allowed to take it inside.
Wow.
And I walked away from that meeting on Monday going, look how far we have all become collectively as this strong group. And I tell you what, who messes with medical mothers?
Who?
What are they thinking? What are they thinking?
I was going to say, I'm not going to downplay the roles of nanas and uncles and aunts and dads, but
absolutely,
in my heart I know this is the mums.
Yes, of course we
this
know
this is
it's the
mums that it have is. Done this and fed their children in a car park.
Yes.
And now they can feed them in the hospital. Yes. This is incredible.
I know. I know. It's so good. You know, we can take real food. Now parents can choose what to feed their children.
Yeah. Yes.
And rightly so. And hurry up every other hospital.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. Who's listening?
So for Wholesome Blends, we'll have some more flavours coming out. We're looking at Australia domination in hospitals and world domination and phoning me or me, I don't know, having a breakdown. That probably is scheduled in somewhere. I don't know.
I tried to have one last year. There's no time.
No.
There isn't time.
No,
is there? No.
There is no time. I had like a break
it's
day.
Like when you
break day.
I had a break day. And there's no time for anything else. Yeah. So
like,
keep going. Because once we know
try
that,
schedule
just
a
to keep
nap
going.
And it's like,
yeah, no.
If you, what were you thinking?
If you ever think you're going to have a nap, a random delivery will turn up, the dog will bark, the phone will ring. It'll be your mum, so she'll ring 10 times in a row just to tell you something that really is of no consequence.
No.
Don't try and nap. You can.
No.
No.
It's a very dangerous thing to do. You're better to just get to school 5 minutes early and let that
close
sun
your eyes in the car.
Feet on the car and have a little nap.
Well, we are just thrilled to have had you today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for recording with us again after we didn't press record.
Thank you. And we just, you know, who knows who our listeners are? Who knows who's listening? They should already know about you, but if they don't, then today's the day. And if you have powers that be in places,
and
you can get Wholesome Blends.
And I feel in my heart that an award is in your future.
Yeah.
Okay, so you hang on to that.
Yeah.
Not just a joint
so
choir
too.
Award. Okay.
Is my choir award not enough?
It is enough, but I feel there's more.
And if you lose, it's okay because we lose.
Yeah, exactly. We'll give you the gift of a nomination.
So we will put all your info in our show notes. Everybody will be able to find you.
Follow her.
Talk
Sarah. About this with people. Get this in the conversation. Let's just have it as a. Some people have nuggets. Some people have a blend. Some people have a milkshake, and that's
absolutely.
How we eat.
That's right.
Yeah.
And every mum is doing that with the love and the pride in feeding their child however they can.
Yeah. And so
absolutely.
Thank you for giving that gift.
Yes. Thank you
to all of our peas.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me on and listening to our story, and thank you for your support, because even though we've done this today, I know we did a joint one last week, but you're also incredibly supportive all the time of the whole tube feeding community. Yeah, and my goodness, if we didn't have people like you, where would we be pushing for us and advocating for us? So thank you. We're all on this together, right?
We're all in the bowl.
It doesn't really matter what's happening.
No. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wherever we're on the road less traveled.
Yep.
That's so true.
That's something we can do. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you, thank you.
You're welcome, thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.